attorney, advocate, author, public speaker, The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
By the way, Senator Blumenthal, where are you this morning?
I am on my way from New Britain. I'm on my way to Washington on the highway, heading from Washington, D.C. up to Connecticut.
I am on a train.
I'm in my car.
I'm on the Acela.
Down to New Haven. So, and then I'm on my way to D.C. for votes. I'm in Washington, D.C. You're in the middle of a vote right now in the United States Senate. I'm in the midst of a Judiciary Committee hearing and just stepped out for a moment. I apologize that I can't spend as long as I'd like.
You know what? You're like a Where's Waldo character. You know, it's like I have to find you with pins on a map. Did you like that, Senator Blumenthal?
I loved it.
Did you love that?
I loved it. And right now I am literally in eastern Connecticut, by the way, near Danielson and Brooklyn. There is a Brooklyn, Connecticut, for all of you in Fairfield County who may be unaware of it. And it's a wonderful town up in northeastern Connecticut. I'm passing through Killingly right now. These are wonderful little towns, but important towns in northeastern Connecticut, waiting for a gigantic snowfall tomorrow. So I'm here actually for a very serious purpose to announce $800,000 in federal investment going to the United States Army Corps of Engineers project at the West Thompson Lake Campground, which is very near and dear and important as open space and a campground to the town of Thompson, Connecticut, up in northeastern Connecticut. I just left Bacchus Hospital, where I was thanking the docs, nurses, all of the staff and professionals there for the great work that they've done in Norwich, Connecticut. And I will be heading back home to southwestern Connecticut, where you are from, in just a little while.
And then you're going to put your blanket over your ottoman and get a cup of cocoa and sit down and wait for the big snow to fall. That's what you should do. But I don't know if you're so in motion, Senator Blumenthal. I don't know. Do you ever sit down with a cup of coffee or a cup of cocoa?
I will definitely be sitting tomorrow. I will not be out and around in the midst of a blizzard. What is the latest?
The latest is it's supposed to start around 7 o'clock tonight.
Okay. And then heavy until tomorrow evening?
Until tomorrow around 7, yeah. And the more or less latest that I can see from National Weather Service is that it could be 6 to 9 from Greenwich to Bridgeport, but then 9 to 12 from Bridgeport to Woodbridge. More or less, we could be getting around 9 inches of snow for a lot of the Fairfield County into New Haven County area. Could be.
Well, everybody should be home unless you have to go out and be safe. I hope that the Eversource crews maintain our power if it goes out. And I hope that our EMS and police and fire all stay safe. Very important.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, the nor'easter is distinguished from your regular old snowfall because of the winds. And I've cautioned my audience, the only thing I think people need to remember is that after the snow has stopped, it doesn't mean that there can't be that occasional gust or a branch that was thinking about falling hasn't fallen yet. So I always tell people, just wait a little bit longer to go outside until after the snow has fallen. Just a little bit wait. And then go and make your snow angels and have a great time. I'm actually looking forward to it. I like a good winter storm. It's one of the reasons I stay in Connecticut. I love our seasons. I'm looking forward to the snow.
Good for you. I think some agree, some disagree. You know, I love winter and snow. And then after a while, I've had enough of it. I think around about March or so, I'm ready.
Yes,
for
that's why the seasons. Every time you're tired of one, you get into another one. Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right.
But where you are is beautiful country. That where you are today, right now, Brooklyn, Danielson.
It is. It is really beautiful. The open space here, the hills, and the people are great. So anyone who hasn't been to northeastern Connecticut, for some of the fairs. You know, there's a Brooklyn Fair, which I go to.
Sorry
often,
about the dog in my background here. Sorry about my dogs.
I've met your dog. Yeah. No need to apologize for your dog. I've met your dog.
Okay.
Your dog is better behaved than some people in the United States Congress.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm sorry about that. Senator Blumenthal, I know you're on judiciary. One of the biggest stories this week, a real story, is that Stephen Breyer is leaving the U.S. Supreme Court, which is going to give an opportunity for President Biden to pick a Supreme Court nominee. You're on the Judiciary Committee. You're in the majority party. Can you educate us about the process? Like, what happens?
It begins, of course, as everyone knows, with the president picking a nominee to serve as a replacement for Justice Breyer. I'd be remiss if I failed to say how much I admire and respect Justice Breyer's service. You know, I've argued 4 cases in the United States Supreme Court, a number of them before him. I've known him, wow, not well, but had an opportunity to meet with him on various occasions. He's a man of tremendous distinction, a pragmatic progressive who understands the real-world consequences of these seemingly abstract decisions. And as much as he is a thinker and scholar, he also has sought to bring together a very divided court. So I'm hopeful that the president, in considering his replacement, will find someone who also fits his legacy of devoted scholarship and commitment to the values and constitutional guarantees, whether on reproductive rights or voting rights, that Justice Breyer has sought to uphold. And once the president makes his selection, he's committed to, by the way, to nominate a black woman. He made that pledge during the campaign. He renewed it yesterday. The name goes to the Senate and to the Judiciary Committee. We do our vetting. There's a background investigation done by the FBI before the president nominates, but we do our own vetting. And then we have a hearing. The hearings usually last about 3 days, very intensive, lengthy, penetrating questions on both sides of the aisle. And then it is voted in committee and sent to the floor of the United States Senate for confirmation. And as you know, only the Senate, not the House of Representatives, votes on confirmation. And one point that I really think is important, my hope, and I'm looking forward to the president nominating someone of such impressive qualifications, someone with such a compelling life story, that there is bipartisan support for the nominee. I really look forward to an individual of intellect and integrity that can gain support on both sides of the aisle so we avoid some of the partisan battle that we've seen over recent nominations. And I hope that we'll move quickly. We must move quickly, swiftly, but fairly, giving all senators an opportunity to question and learn and assess the qualifications of the next justice.
One of the people that seems to be on the short list is Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And one of the reasons she seems to be on the short list, she's a member of the D.C. Circuit, is because in her confirmation, she got support from Lindsey Graham, as well as Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, all 3 Republicans. So that's why people are saying that that bodes well if she were to be the nominee for her ultimate confirmation.
I've heard that point made. I've also heard similar kinds of speculation about other possible nominees, judges from states where there are 2 Republican senators, for example, South Carolina. Judge nominee Childs is one of them, having Senators Scott and Graham potentially on her side. I'm really not going to get into specific names. I don't want to jinx them.
Okay.
And I also, really want to point out that we have a very deep bench of African-American women who are supremely well-qualified, both in character and experience. Many of them litigators. Judge Brown Jackson is a former public defender or a defense counsel. She's now on a court of appeals, one of the most prominent, the D.C. Circuit, as you said. There's really a deep bench, not only women already on the bench, but also in the legal community generally. There's no requirement that the judge, that the next justice be a sitting judge. And by the way, just as a kind of esoteric fast fact, there's no requirement that a justice even be a lawyer. So, you know, the president has a wide range of choices.
You know, the reason that that's important, and I say this always in my private life, is because the Supreme Court is less about law than it is about policy. And from my point of view, you know, where I sit, one of the greatest chief justices, in my opinion, was Earl Warren, who, although he was a lawyer, was a governor. He wasn't a judge. He's a former governor of California. And I think that he brought to the bench a world, in other words, an understanding of the world, a pragmatic understanding of the political consequences of some of the decisions he was going to be making. And I think that we have gotten in the last 20, 30 years to the point where we seem to only select, for example, Supreme Court nominees who have clerked as Supreme Court, you know, in their prior life as a right out of law school, they've clerked for Supreme Court justices. To me, that's a ridiculous criteria to be a Supreme Court judge. I mean, it's nice to have, but it has nothing to do with whether or not you should be a Supreme Court judge, in my own opinion, because, you know, it just bespeaks a certain kind of privilege early on in your career. It doesn't have anything to do with how well you're going to do on the bench. It's my opinion.
You know, I was a law clerk for Justice Blackmun, Harry Blackmun, on the United States Supreme Court.
Which is
and
amazing.
When he was appointed, he was dubbed one of the Minnesota twins because he was thought to be exactly alike to then Chief Justice Warren Burger, who was a very conservative justice appointed by Richard Nixon. And Chief Justice Burger urged then President Nixon to appoint Harry Blackmun, telling him that good old Harry would be just like Chief Justice Burger. Well, as it turned out, Harry Blackmun was far from a conservative justice, and he grew. He grew on the court. He grew personally, intellectually, and that's the mark of really a great human being. We all change and mature. We gain insights and wisdom. And sometimes we change our views.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the mark of a great judge or justice is being willing to listen.
That is
the
mark. The
justices on the Supreme Court have to listen to each other. They meet every week on cases before they cast their votes. They have private meetings, and they gather behind closed doors, and they freely exchange views. They have to get along with each other also. It's
That's
pretty
true.
Bad if they can't get together.
That's true.
So you're right that there are personal qualifications, not just legal knowledge, that are very important in a judge or a justice.
Yeah. It would be fun to be a fly on a wall in some of those conversations, wouldn't it? Well, maybe you were, because you were a clerk at one time. That must have been really something.
No, clerks are not allowed in on the conferences.
Oh.
You know, no one but the justices are allowed in. Even the people who may serve them coffee are not allowed to stay. So they are completely alone. And as a result, there are very few leaks from the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the legendary friendships was between Justices Ginsburg and Scalia. I mean, you know, they were friends, and that's good that they were friends. That's really good that they were friends.
Right.
Yeah.
They had in common a love of opera, for example.
Yeah.
I'm told they sometimes went to opera together. Justice Scalia was famous for his hunting. I don't think Justice Ginsburg went hunting too many times with him, but they had a very strong friendship, and that's true of others on the court as well, in terms of their friendships with each other, regardless of their differences in views, and kind of a model for what we should be doing.
Senator Blumenthal, with respect to timing of all of this, I mean, what do you foresee? There are also, I think, a few dozen other people that have recently been nominated by President Biden. You're in the Judiciary Committee. How quickly, once you get this nomination now, can you get this vetting done? Because it was extraordinary how quickly Amy Coney Barrett became a Supreme Court justice. I mean, I never saw anything as fast in my life. Are we talking about something in the Speedy Gonzales route here? What are we talking about?
Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed in 4 weeks, but there's nothing in the Constitution or the laws, the statutes, or even the rules of the Senate about how long it should take. And I will say we should move quickly. We should move expeditiously and fairly, giving all of the senators a chance to review the relevant evidence and the testimony by the nominee before the Judiciary Committee, where I sit. But the country deserves a justice to replace Justice Breyer when his service is complete at the end of this term, which will be in June. Okay. And I think that is a very doable timetable.
I see. Okay. In other words, so that there's sort of a seamless transition. He'll be gone. He'll do the rest of his work this term, and then there'll be somebody else in place to pick up the baton for the summer to get ready for the October session. Got it. Okay. All right. Well, Senator Blumenthal, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for calling in from the Northeast Corner. And we'll be following you. We'll be following you like pinpoints on a map. Get back home safe to Greenwich and put your feet up for a day or so. And enjoy the snow. All right. Take care. Thanks for coming on.
Take care,
Lisa.
We'll
be right back. You too. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.